Hi, everyone. Welcome to Maggie's Podcast with Wine Geeks. Today we have the pleasure of yapping all things wine with Mark Vanston, the National Sales Director for Inglenook Estates in Napa, California. So basically, he gets to roam around the United States drinking great wine and chatting with all types of people. So listen up, friends. Inglenook is one of the reasons we use the term Napa Cab in the wine biz. Now I'm thinking, Inglenook is such a historical vineyard. I'm not even sure really where to begin, but I'm wondering, can you, Mark, share some of the history with us? Because it's been there forever.
Yeah, sure. It's really part of our American wine history. We don't go back to the 15th and 16th century like they do in Europe. So the roots really begin around 1870.
Wow.
And Napa is, you know, one of the premier growing areas in the United States. And they realized that it had similar qualities to Bordeaux as far as temperature and soils. So in 1879, Gustav Niebaum, who was a sea captain, who was quite wealthy at the time, because as that's how usually you get in the wine business, because you need to have a lot of money to lose a lot of money. But he really wanted to build like America's first chateau and showcase around the world that the Americas can produce fine wine as well. So he spared no expense at the time. He amassed a library of over 600 books in all different languages. And everything that was state of the art at the time went into this property.
Wow.
As far as gravity fed, a good friend of his was Louis Pasteur, and he convinced him to everything to be nickel and brass, to control bacteria and to be able to control the fermentation process and all of these things that, you know, we're trying to still do today. The reason why the winery was built to produce world-class wines to take around the world, we're still doing that today.
Wow. So wait a minute. We're talking like in the late 1800s they're doing this?
Yeah. The winery started in 1879. The first vintage of the winery was in 1882.
Wonder how that tasted.
You know, it was the early stages, you know.
Yeah.
You know, took rootstocks from Bordeaux in France, pre-phylloxera, so... he won a lot of awards in the World's Fairs, which was huge, you know, obviously back in those days. And then, you know, you have this roller coaster of events that happened around the world.
Yeah.
You had, for instance, in 1906, the great earthquake in San Francisco, which was the number one source for income for the winery, 80% of the city burnt down. You have that hiccup. Then
All
you
right.
have World War One.
Yep.
And then you have the Noble Experiment.
Yeah.
You know what that is?
Nope.
Prohibition.
Oh, I'm not good with that term.
Well, Prohibition, they ceased alcohol in the United States for 13 years.
Like what? 13 years?
You could not produce a bottle of wine. You could not produce a bottle of spirits or beer.
But yeah. Could you, like, do it and not tell anybody?
Well, that's where they made bathtub gin. And, you know, you had bootleggers bringing products in from Canada and different ports around the United States. But it was illegal to commercially sell alcohol in the United States.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you
have
this guy. Yeah. Right. You got this guy who makes this really great wine. And he's, you know, making it like this big chateau like they do everywhere else. And then all of a sudden, there are these little blips happening.
Sure.
Oh.
Yeah. So the Prohibition ended in 1933. And his great-grandnephew picked up the flag and started producing fine wines as well.
Okay.
And his great-grandnephew started making some amazing wines. He was the first one to put Napa Valley on the label. He was the first one to put the vintage on the label.
Really?
He was also the first one to plant Merlot on the property. His 1941 Cabernet is considered one of the best bottles of wine ever produced in the United States. So says Wine Spectator.
Wow. So can I ask you something? So he put Napa Valley on the label. So why would somebody do that? Are they why do you put it, why would they do that?
Well, to make it as a point of reference of where it came from, you know, different if you're looking for an appellation in Bordeaux or in Italy,
yeah.
You know, you want to know, okay, is it from Tuscany or is it Piedmont or whatever? So
okay.
A sense of place.
Got it. So this is where putting Napa on the
right.
on the map.
So, yeah, and we still were really not a wine-consuming nation until almost the 70s, because even after World War II, we were still what they call brown goods, which was brown whiskey
yep.
and beer.
Yep, okay.
Just to give you an idea, in the 60s, the average bottle of Napa wine was $1.47.
What?
Yes. Very hard to make any money back in
wow.
the day. Nothing like it is today.
That's cheaper than like dog food.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I mean, I don't know what the ratio. I think the ratio would probably be like $8 in today's dollar.
Term, wow.
Whatever, but it's, yeah. So it was, people just didn't drink a lot of wine or would spend a lot of money.
Yeah,
so,
I get that. I know that. I get that about like, you know, people not really knowing wine and not really understanding it. Yeah.
So for a winery to stand the test of time going
right.
back to 1879 and now also to be in a family owned winery, Francis Ford Coppola owns a winery. He's lived on the property since 1975.
Wait a minute. How did that happen?
He was looking for a place to write in the country after a small movie.
Did you just say Francis Ford Coppola?
Yes. Yes. The Godfather.
I'm thinking of like, I hear like a music, some sort of like whoop, 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 whoop. Is that him?
No.
That's not him?
No.
Who's that? You know, with the, what's that movie? Apocalypse. The whoop, 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 the helicopters.
That was after he went to the property.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
But he went there in in early mid-70s, right after The Godfather, so he had made a little money.
I see.
He was looking for a place
to... You mentioned that before.
He was looking for a place to write, and he... the real estate agent said a house just came up, you might want to take a look at it.
Oh.
So he fell in love with it, and so he purchased that, which was the back half of the winery, because the winery was sold to, which became Hugh Blind, Diageo of today. And,
oh, that's what happened between that blip time?
Right.
Got it. Okay.
The family had a pride over profit mentality, and actually that was their marketing slogan.
And pride over profit.
Anybody in business
knows. I'm going to write that down. Can I write that down?
Sure.
Pride? Well, I wish I could write. I only have a paw.
Well, we'll paw print it someplace.
Yeah.
Had no intention really getting in the wine business. It really was Robert Mondavi, his next door neighbor, convinced him to get
into
the wine business.
Oh, cool.
And he had what he called the Rubicon moment, which is the point of no return in Italian folklore. And he decided, okay, if I'm going to do this, I better be fully committed. So
sounds like when Julie married Bob.
Yes. Yes. It is a commitment. Yes. And his first wine he produced was Rubicon. His first vintage was 1978. We still make Rubicon today, which is always the icon off the estate, which receives the best of the best out of the different blocks we have of Cabernet. And he's been a steward of this historic estate. To him, it's so important because it is part of our American wine history. And he thinks that, you know, moving forward through his family, it'll still have a place in our American history as the beginnings of the wine industry in the United States.
And I love the fact that you said that, like, he just went there to write.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden became this.
Well, he grew up with wine. He said that, you know, it was on the table. It was an Italian-American family that always mm-hmm. had wine on the table. And To him, it was a natural thing. So when he bought the property, he thought, yeah, I'll make some wine for friends and family. And,
fun.
And I said, okay. And
but didn't realize what he was sitting
Robin
on.
Robin Mondavi, he says, is the one who convinced him to get in the wine business.
Yeah, because you think about it. Like, I don't know a lot about, like, root stock and stuff, but I could imagine that the property there had, like, amazing.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just like where fine wine is produced anywhere around the world, you need the right soil, the right climate, the right temperatures. I mean, you can grow Cabernet Sauvignon in the middle of Boston here.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, it doesn't mean it's going to be a great wine. You know? And same thing anywhere else. So what he had to work with was, you know, some of the best terroir, you know, soil and sun.
Yeah, sure,
to work with to make fine wines. Napa is so diverse and so unique. I mean, it's 30 miles long, but it has somewhere around, I believe, is about 55% of the world's soil deposits in that 30-mile stretch.
That's so crazy when you think about that. 30 miles, and it has all the different terroir that you need to make great wine.
Right. Napa's not just Napa. There's because the rainfall is completely different from one point to the other, and the same thing with rainfall and degree days. It's so diverse, and that lends to making great wine because you have, you know, all these diversity.
Very cool. That's great.
Warm days, cool nights.
What do you mean?
That's what Napa has. Warm days, cool nights.
You need the
cool.
Ahead.
It's what they call a Mediterranean climate, and only 2% of the world has that type of climate.
Really? Mm-hmm. And Napa has it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's the best ideal?
It's one of the best. I mean, you can't disregard, say, Sonoma or what they do in Oregon and different places.
Right. It just is so, for me, it's just so, like, because it's such a small area, you know, I almost could run it in a day.
And it's 30 miles.
Yeah, and you're, hey, do they have a marathon in Napa?
That I don't know, but it almost seems like it is when the traffic backs up that you could you could definitely walk faster than you can drive.
Right.
Because basically there's two roads in the whole that 30 mile stretch.
Right. Yeah, I've been on it.
And it's insane.
Takes forever.
Yeah.
They should do like a marathon there because it's 26.2 miles, right?
They might probably do some 5K, 10K kind of things.
But I mean, straight down, back and forth, I could do it. I bet I could. Interesting.
Yeah, and you know, they do the hot air balloons. And
there's a
tourist train that goes through the middle.
So when you're looking at Napa, so I'm seeing Napa as this long strip kind of. So where is Inglenook on that?
Exactly in the middle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he thought that it was the best of both worlds because, it's much hotter below, much cooler up north, and right in the middle, he thought was the best. So that's where he planted his flag. And I mean, the tools to understand what he had to work with compared to today, it's totally different.
Even,
you know, he did the due diligence of, you know, planting it there.
And what exactly? So there's
Rutherford. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's in Rutherford. No, Rutherford. But I'm thinking like what? Oh yeah, I know Rutherford now. I know that little...
There's a Rutherford
kind of
Grill.
Right in the middle, yeah.
The Rutherford Grill is right in the middle. And
yeah,
they're
very pet friendly.
Yes, we're directly across the street.
Oh, I may have done a little something over there at some point.
Yeah, there's two big gates in the front. But yeah, it's right across the street from the Rutherford Grill. Next to BV. And then you have Gregory Chills. And across the street, down further, there's a little Saint Supri.
So much all the so names cool that you know. Boom, 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 right down. It all happens. I had a thought, and I forget what I was going to ask you, too. It was back to Rutherford, back to being in the middle of Napa. Let me think. It's gone. I have a very small brain.
That's it. Beautiful face, by the way.
Thank you. So, What different types of wines do they make at England?
Mostly Cabernet. We make a small amount of Sauvignon Blanc, a small amount of Zinfandel. We also produce a beautiful white Rhone blend of Viognier, Marsanne, Rossanne, which is not typical in Napa Valley whatsoever. Huh. A beautiful wine. And it's really, the style of the winery is a little bit different because we're across between, say, Old World, New World in style.
Okay.
Our winemaker, Philippe Bascol, also is a winemaker at Chateau Margaux.
Really?
And so he gives a little more of a...
That sounds a little fancy.
No, well, it's a little more Bordelaise, but, you know, French wine's a little more elegant, more food-friendly.
Yeah.
You know, some Napa have gotten bigger over the years, you know, bigger fruit, bigger alcohol, bigger use of wood.
Mm. Yeah.
Because sometimes you get bigger scores if you have it bigger type
sure.
of thing.
Sure.
But we're in a different direction. And they're just much more approachable, fresher, and definitely, I believe, is a better companion to food.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I've had it with duck. I've had this wine with vegetarian dinners mm-hmm. that I do. I've had it with chicken. Yeah, you're right. I think it's very approachable. Very approachable.
Yes.
Yeah. And it doesn't compete with the wine, with the food. It's
balance.
Yeah, and that's what I.
No different than a food dish.
Yeah.
You have to have balance because if all you were tasting was tarragon or something, it's a disconnect because it overpowers a dish.
Totally agree.
Same thing with wine. If you know the winemaker says if someone just says all it is red currants or black currants or something, he says well then I have not done my job because not one element should really be that front and center. It should be really balanced. You're picking up a lot of different flavors and nuances. And the second sip, you're picking up even more.
More, yeah.
It's just really harmony in the glass.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Harmony in the glass. I like that. Very nice. All right. Okay. Do you have anything more we can talk about? Are you...
Your call.
Oh, I had a little cough. Well, thanks, Mark.
Well, pleasure being here. And
it's awesome.
It's a little information. And like I said, it's really part of American wine history. And, you know, there was a period they made some inexpensive wines, but those wines do not exist anymore. They've been long out of the marketplace. It's just really about world-class fine wines.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm about, too, like world-class fine everything. So, yeah, and that's why I think Inglenook is really an important wine to bring here.
True.
Absolutely. And it's been a pleasure, absolutely, yapping all things wine today. Oh, brother, you want to visit? Oh, jeepers. We have a friend that wants to visit us today.
What?
Oh, I get it. Sorry, people. I missed that one. Yes, I will go out and visit the winery and have fun at the winery and walk around the. I love walking around the vines. So much fun.
The grounds are stunning. It's a picturesque.
Yeah, gorgeous.
Yeah.
Well, all of Napa is gorgeous. Yeah. It's absolutely gorgeous. But thank you so much. It's been a pleasure yapping all things wine with you today.
Yes. Thank you very much for the invite.
Yes. And I'm just...
Welcome me back sometime.
Oh, I'd love it. Thank you. I'd love it.